ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Hello and welcome to Chronicles for something approximating a Halloween special. I do believe this will actually come out the day after Halloween, but you'll have to work with it. And as you can see, we're actually in Studio One today because we have a bigger cast of hosts. Joining me for this episode of Chronicles is Harry and
Hello.
Beau, who you obviously know very well. And today we're going to be talking all about The Shadow Over Innsmouth by H.P. Lovecraft. Because what better thing to mark Halloween with than some classic Lovecraft? And a great opportunity for me as well, because as I've said to you both many times, this is actually the first time I've been able to read some Lovecraft, and it seems like a great opportunity to bring in some more learned heads, some people who enjoyed his work, you know, longer than I have, and so looking forward to having a discussion.
Yeah, we've been wanting to cover Lovecraft at Lotus Eaters for a long while, and we've covered quite a few things that are Lovecraft adjacent on the screen. I don't know if you can see it on the video you're watching. We've got Junji Ito's picture of H.P. Lovecraft that he drew a portrait of, Junji Ito being a Japanese comic author who's heavily inspired by the works of Lovecraft. And speaking of which, Lovecraft is probably one of the most influential horror writers of the modern period. You can't really go anywhere without Lovecraft having inspired some author or some work which has gone on to inspire things that you've probably heard of. Stephen King, I mean, being the most notable example of somebody who was heavily inspired by Lovecraft, which is ironic given the complete divergence of their own social views.
Right, yeah. Mm.
But Lovecraft is someone that I've appreciated for a long time. I was introduced to him through the music of Metallica. Because they're big Lovecraft fans and have at least three songs written about the Cthulhu mythos. Call of Cthulhu, obvious. Thing That Should Not Be, which is based directly on The Shadow Over Innsmouth. And one song off of their 2016 album, which name I cannot remember, but which the chorus is just James shouting, Cthulhu Awakens. So I assume it's based off of the Call of Cthulhu.
Sounds pretty badass.
Yeah, so as a young teenager learning about that, I thought, well, I'd heard of him as well. I'd heard of Cthulhu, a big squid monster, sounds awesome. So I got some of the collections and read those stories, but this was my first opportunity to go back and reread in about 10 years, maybe a bit longer than that. I'd not read it in, not touched it in a long while, and it was a great experience to do so. I'll also preface by saying that we were originally going to be focusing primarily on At the Mountains of Madness.
Yes.
Which is one of his most famous stories and one which has influenced, again, a lot of people. John Carpenter was influenced in the naming convention for his film At the Mouth of Madness. The problem is, for as famous as that story is and as well regarded and loved, it's kind of like a lore master story.
Right.
It's slow, it's plodding, it's mainly a guy going around a mountain describing the hieroglyphs that he is able to see, which gives a huge lore dump for the actual Cthulhu mythos, but as a moment-to-moment narrative, it's not very thrilling.
Yeah.
So I suggested we switch to Shadow Over Innsmouth.
I just arbitrarily picked At the Mountains of Madness because I thought, oh, it's about 100 pages, so it's a longer story, it'll give us plenty to talk about. And then Harry just saw my face just slipping into regret and despair as I was like, am I supposed to understand?
Well, it's the fact that about two pages in, you kind of looked up at me with this confused, quizzical look and said, Are all of his stories written like this? And it clocked for me because I remember reading it as a teenager and I thought, oh, yep, that was my reaction as well, because I started with Call of Cthulhu and then moved on to Shadow Over Innsmouth, Dunwich Horror, which are the three stories I reread in preparation for this. All very well written, all exciting. They've got some mystery, they've got drama, they've got action in them. At the Mountains of Madness, very drawn out, very plodding, and it didn't really thrill me. And so I'm glad it wasn't just me. Perhaps, I know you've listened to them in audiobook. Does it work better as an audiobook?
I didn't think that about At the Mountains of Madness. It's like The Thing. You know, John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's like that. No, so my relationship with Lovecraft, I'd let you know where I am with
it. Yeah, please.
I read, years ago, when I was like 20 or 22, I read that one, I can't even remember what it's called now, about where it's a short, very short one, where it's The Mummy Wakes Up. So I read that, and it's actually kind of almost abstract. And I read that, and I was like, oh, I don't really like that. And I was young, and it's not one of his best stories, I don't think. It's like called Inhotep or something like that. And so from then on, I was like, I'll give Lovecraft a swerve. And he's inspired by Edgar Allan Poe. I'll just read Edgar Allan Poe. I love Edgar Allan Poe, right? I don't need Lovecraft. He's an American. 20th century American, not interested. I don't, you know, I'm only joking with that. So for years, I didn't get into Lovecraft, for years and years. And then, I don't know, maybe just for Lotus Eater, so maybe 5-6 years ago, something like that, I listened to on audiobook, it must have been the Dunwich Horror. That's the one where there's that kid that grows up abnormally fast, right?
Yeah.
And then gets killed in the...
In the library.
Yeah, right, okay. So at that point, I was like, oh, I've got Lovecraft wrong. This is great. And then in the years since then, every now and again, someone will send me a link to something Lovecraft has said that's, like, really based. Stroke, completely racist. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe...
overlapping.
Yeah.
Very often.
I'm like, oh, well, you know, Lovecraft, okay. And then, but I still hadn't really done much Lovecraft until about a month ago, maybe 5 weeks ago.
Sure.
It came up in the office. Do you want to do At the Mountains of Madness? And I was like, sure, okay, I'll read it or listen to it on audiobook. And anyway, so I did. Thought it was brilliant, but realised I didn't know anywhere near enough about the lore. I hadn't read anywhere near enough Lovecraft, or hardly read any Lovecraft. So in the last 5 weeks or so, I've gone back and listened to on audiobook, because tons of it is on YouTube. You can find whole playlists.
I believe Mr. H Reviews has done a few audiobooks.
Yeah, he pointed a few out and sent us some links.
Yeah,
yeah, your old buddy Nate.
So over the last 5 weeks or so, I've listened to 12, 15 of them.
You've probably long read ones more as well. Than me in that.
The long ones, all the long ones as well, like where I'm like playing a computer game. I'm not interested in a 15-minute short story. I want the one that's 2 hours long or more.
Yeah.
And I even listened to one the other day that was a collaboration. That was basically Night at the Museum. It's Night at the Museum.
Just as funny? Just as slapstick?
No.
Did you imagine Owen Wilson?
Really horrible and dark. So I've just been Lovecraft maxing for the last few weeks, and it's been really, really enjoyable.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of his stories, to start the literary criticism, a lot of his stories are the same, but most people like that, right? Most recording artists, they've got a sound, and all their albums more or less sound similar. A lot of writers... I mean, like, I'm thinking of Arthur Conan Doyle. A lot of his stories are very formulaic. It's basically the same story over and over and over again, well, but with little
it
tweaks.
Becomes, once you've found your theme, your stories become variations on the theme.
Right.
And it's something that works. And for Lovecraft, I mean, I believe he was writing stories to get paid, to make a living for the publications, most notably Weird Tales, that he was being published in. So if he finds something, Weird Tales are going to keep accepting. He can expand on it as he goes, maybe write a larger novella here and there, like At the Mountains of Madness. But he's got a formula that works, then he'll go with it. And he did.
Also, just to say, just to build on that, that's absolutely true. But also, people that know Lovecraft and have read lots and lots of Lovecraft will also say, what I just said there's really unfair, because there are loads of exceptions to that. There are loads of other stories he wrote which actually aren't anything like his sort of the classic formula of a single first-person narrator going somewhere creepy, getting chased by something you don't really, you never really describes properly.
And then going mad.
And then at the end, wondering if it was all a dream or whether he's mad. Like, so not all of his stories at all. Like, a lot of them are.
And Shadow Over
It,
this one is like cut to that template.
Yeah.
To a T.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The ending is slightly different because instead of going mad or refusing to accept what's gone on, the character that you're following finds out that he's deeply connected to
spoilers
for almost 100-year-old stories.
I'm joking.
But I like your idea of Lovecraft, Maxim, because I now like to think that you've discovered and embraced all new prejudices that you never before thought possible.
Your powers have doubled since before you read Lovecraft.
Well, that's one thing I think that's worth saying right off the bat, is put it in his context. So he died of natural causes before World War II, like
1937.
There you go, 1937. Yeah. And he was
some
only
of his stories hadn't been published by then.
A lot
either.
Of them, yeah. And he was only in his mid-40s, so he died young.
Yeah.
But so that's important to remember, that he's basically doing all his writings in the 1910s, 20s and 30s.
Mm.
Right, so, and he's a man of his time.
Right.
His hometown is Providence, Rhode Island.
Mm.
So he's a New Englander. You know, not all of his stories by any way, but the majority of them are in New England, right?
Right.
So I think that's one of the first things you've got to say about Lovecraft before you actually go any further.
Because he's a very, very, a very controversial author because of his overt and explicit racial prejudices.
Which is extremely overt in this particular story, which isn't at all why we chose it.
Yeah.
And social prejudices as well.
I was going to say, and his class prejudices. Yeah. He very clearly is of the WASP middle and upper business classes and holds the lower orders, particularly those that he perceives as inbred backwards rural folk, with complete contempt.
Yes. He has strong views on the
comical contempt.
The white trash. Yeah.
But then you read about how he moved, as we were discussing before, to New York. And he was in such a traumatic shock at the level of what he considered to be human detritus that occupied the city in the early 20th century, that he couldn't eat and lost a load of weight. And
lost like 40 pounds stress.
He was always very sickly, but he became particularly sickly in New York because he hated the fact that it was full of Jews, Italians, the lower orders, anyone who wasn't
blacks.
The fact anyone who wasn't a properly bred WASP was utter scum to him.
This really is the point as well, isn't it? When it's like, oh, Lovecraft was a white supremacist. It's like, no, he was an English supremacist. One of the reasons why he wanted advocated for intervening in World War One on the American side was because of the fact that, no, we need to go save the motherland. We need to go save the homeland. We need to save the English and help them out.
There's one thing to say about New York. I believe he moved there for like about 2 years towards the end of his life and only found out a day or two ago that he got married briefly. He was like married for like, is that right? For like a year or two, and
ironically
then that fell apart.
Enough,
and all of that happened in New York.
Ironically, to a Jewish woman.
Yes. Oh, really?
But he did say that she was well assimilated.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah. And it did fall apart anyway.
There's one of the lesser known stories I listened to I can't remember the name of it, but other than it's got the word Brooklyn in it. And I don't know, like horror in Brooklyn or something, or terror in Brooklyn or something like that. And
always relevant.
And it's quite a good one. But you can tell, it just drips through it, this absolute disgust of New York. Like in there, the premise of that story is sort of that you wouldn't think that there'd be like ancient rites going on and like human sacrifice and stuff in Brooklyn. But there is.
Oh,
like, that's the thing.
Right, certainly think there would be, actually.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, one of the things I would say, again, before we get on to sort of really the detail of the Innsmouth story, is a little bit more about his life. And when you learn a little bit more about that, I think it puts a lot of the stuff, it explains a lot of his stories, why he keeps returning to the same themes over and over and over again. One thing is that in his various stories, I was listening to one just yesterday about how he feels like perhaps our real waking reality is just virtual and sleep is real. Your dreams and the sleep state, that's the real reality.
Was that the Dream Quest? There's one called the Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath.
No, it wasn't that one, I don't think.
And there's another one that's got sleep in the title.
The point is, he talks about sleep and dreams all the time.
And that corresponds very well with the ending of this particular story.
All right. Mm. And apparently he suffered from sort of night terrors most of his life, or had crazily vivid dreams all his life. Mm. And the first thing he ever wrote when he was a little kid, he was like 6 years old, he did a little kiddie's attempt at a story. Yeah. And it was about these crazy dreams he's got. And then another thing, his dad was institutionalized as insane when he was like three.
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Died in an asylum.
Of syphilis, and
then,
apparently.
And then years later, well, syphilis eventually sends you mad, so...
Right, yeah, that. Sure.
And then years later, his mum went to an asylum as well.
No wonder they pop up so much in his stories. And it makes it quite appropriate that the name of the fictional town that he created for his stories, Arkham, was also appropriated in the Batman series as Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all connects together.
So that's the other theme that Lovecraft just returns to. It might be every single thing I've ever listened to or read is madness, the theme of madness.
Do the characters go mad in Herbert West? I know that's...
The Reanimator.
Yeah, The Reanimator. Because that's one of his stories that also got a loose adaptation in the 1980s, I believe, where it's a film just called Reanimator, a video nasty B-movie type thing, which I've not watched, but I need to watch.
See, I don't think
and
the main...
Where they're just basically reanimating corpses and creating...
Frankenstein.
Zombies, yeah.
It's like a Frankenstein thing, and the various monsters come back and get the guy. So, for example, in that, it's a good example. I might be wrong... That the main character, the main narrator, doesn't go insane, but the other main character in it, the reanimator, he is sort of going insane slowly, and still in that story, loads. It's like, something happens, and he said, and in that moment, I figured it was the first kernels of insanity were creeping in. Like he just talks about it all the time, all the time. Something or other happens, or something or other someone says, and it's like, and that's insane. And that's the first, kernel of madness creeping in. Did I imagine it or am I mad? Just that over and over and over and over again.
Mm. To return to your point as well, Beau, about what you were saying about the madness of his parents as well. After the institutionalisation and death of his father, I believe he made reference to, bear in mind, it'd only have been very early teenage years by this point, perhaps even a little younger, but he talked about being suicidal. Right, wishing to kill himself. And so these dark thoughts of terror were obviously, as you say, from his mind from a very young age. And so you have to ask yourself, well, okay, if he felt like that from such a young age, what kept him powering through? What led him to actually keep going, keep working, keep meeting people, keep caring about life? Because obviously a huge part of the Lovecraftian philosophy is cosmicism, the idea that it's just an indifferent ancient universe and humans aren't at the centre of it. There's nothing particularly special about us, so why care?
And the true reality is so unknowable and horrifying that it drives you mad to even get a small glimpse of it.
Yes. However, he had an insatiable curiosity just about the world, right? He was a chemistry.
He was actually a bit of a scientist.
Astronomy, yeah. Just all number of scientific subjects, just putting life under the microscope. Even up to his final days of his death, he was, so long as he still had strength to lift his pen, he was chronicling like the pain and how it felt.
Oh, he was also a famous man of letters.
Yes.
He wrote volumes and volumes and volumes of correspondence with all sorts of different people. So while he was known as quite a shut-in, his mind clearly wanted to understand and explore the world and to hold relationships with other peoples, even if he himself was not one to often be seen out and about anywhere.
Yes.
He was friends with loads and loads and loads of other important sci-fi and horror writers.
I forget the name of the guy who created the Conan series, but he was friends and in correspondence with him quite often.
They would borrow each other's ideas and steal, like deliberately, happily, willingly, each other's bits of each other's universe and write them into their own stories.
Well, I know that in the books, Conan apparently has a lot of references to the Cthulhu mythos, which outside of it just being awesome Conan Barbarian stories, I also makes me want to read those even more.
Mm. Yeah. There's a few things you mentioned there that are, I think, worth noting again before we sort of dive into the one story we're sort of meant to be talking about here. So the idea that his dad went insane and his mum went insane, And on some level, he is insane. But it's sort of not completely insane, but just aware that he's sort of unbalanced in some way. And that thing where obviously all the stories and all the main characters in it are absolutely obsessed and interested in like the occult and unknowable, unprovable things. And they're very, very often there's a dialogue between that character and a completely materialist, scientific, logical character, often. And that's Lovecraft himself. He was a scientist.
Yes.
First and foremost, but also obviously loved all things occult and weird and paranormal. I think they're the best sort of paranormal people are people that are actually have a ground, do actually have a grounding in real science. So they're not just completely woo-woo, crystal skull, like paper-thin nonsense. It is actually grounded in logic and reason and science as well at the same time. That's what makes it good and believable and has substance to it. Because,
absolutely.
Yeah. It creates a tension within the stories that makes them interesting because the character is always questioning themselves and in conflict with themselves.
Well, going, I'm a reasonable, logical man. What I just saw could not have happened. It could not have, but it did.
Well, it's, you know, this is exactly the stock character. Stock's a bit pejorative, but like the type of character in M.R. James's ghost stories. Just, you know, the arch rationalist who just comes into contact with the supernatural.
I think it speaks to the changing of eras that was happening through the 19th century and into the early 20th century, when in the kind of post-Enlightenment fashion, people were perceiving themselves as having left an era of mysticism and the gods and the irrational and entering an era of science and the rational. And this speaks to the tension that was happening there, of, that was occurring then, of somebody like Lovecraft seeing that and saying, but what if?
We
can do amazing things, we can create wonders, we can catalogue and understand the entire world, but what if there was something to the way we thought before? What if those old ways of seeing the world actually linger? What if they have some impact still that even with all of our advances and technological marvels, we can't catalogue, we can't comprehend, we can't understand, we still look to the stars and we see mysteries. We still, in the case of this and other stories like The Call of Cthulhu, we look to the ocean and we still don't truly understand what lies beneath the waves. Because that was something that's also quite... People term Lovecraft's style of horror as cosmic horror. He's one of the guys who created this concept of cosmic horror, which is true, but also a lot of his stories, particularly Shadow Over Innsmouth, deal with what horrors lurk beneath the ocean. And the old gods themselves are not just star creatures of space. They are creatures of the ocean, the deep ones. Lovecraft's Cthulhu is this enormous squid creature which embodies both at the same time because it's got the squid-like features while also having wings, so it can exist both in the stars and in the oceans. So it's this whole concept of mystery, how much we know about the world, there are still all of these mysteries that we may never be able to resolve that I think really shows itself through Lovecraft's work.
Absolutely. There's this theme that he returns to again and again and again and again, that humans aren't sort of the first intelligent creatures on the Earth, that there's actually eons and eons of time before where all sorts of things happened, right? You actually get loads of that. Finally, he gives us loads of that detail in... At the Mountains of Madness, but it's in loads of his work before that, that, yeah, whether it's creatures or more than one type of creature from the stars, or it's creatures that live under the ice in Antarctica, or creatures that live under the sea, or a mixture of all those things going on all at once. One last thing I think it's I really want to say about Lovecraft, the man, before we go into the story, is just a tiny bit more building on his real life, because I think it's like an important insight. So he was born to like a waspish New England, Rhode Island, rich family. His dad goes in an asylum when he's like three. So him and his mum went to live with one of his grandparents.
Yeah, Whipple Van Buren Phillips.
Right.
Was his name.
And he was really rich. They lived in a giant house, right? And they were really, really rich.
Yeah.
Or, well, not really, really rich, but...
In the beginning, they were.
They had a big house
enough.
And loads of money. And then when Lovecraft's about 13 or so, I think, the grandfather dies of natural causes, and they have to, like, what's left of the family have to sell the estate or something. So they go from this living in this big grand house to living in just a normal small house, and then just living off the money, like eking out the money for the rest of his life. Like, so like Lovecraft never had like a normal job, apparently. Just a normal job where you earn a wage and that's how you get by and pay your bills.
Never imagine
he didn't do. He never did
a normal job. Imagine him doing a paper round.
So, so eking out the money and making ends meet with selling stories a bit, because he never got critical or sort of commercial success in his own lifetime. Right? He was never a big
like a Van Gogh character who only attained notoriety and fame after his death.
He's not like Stephen King, a millionaire in his own lifetime. No, nothing like that. So. It's another classic thing that someone that's aristocratic or used to have money or their family used to have money and now they don't. And there's a little bit, if not a massive chip on your shoulder about that. Right? It's like the world screwed us in some way out of our proper position of being aristocratic and better than everyone else. But we have to actually scrabble around in the dirt like everyone else, actually, though, and make ends meet.
It's a common story.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can even find it within my own family.
I
suppose if either of you went far enough back, you'd probably find a similar story as well. With
most families have got something like that.
It was a great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, spending all of the family money on his mistress slash replacement wife after he became a widower.
Yeah.
It happens. It really happens.
Yeah. And no chips on your shoulder, Harry.
Well, I only learnt about it in the past few years, so I've not had enough time to develop the chip on my shoulder.
But he definitely, one of the few things that he says is the word decadent. Mm. Okay, so when you read someone that's old-fashioned, whether it's early 20th century or older, quite often their usage will be different. They'll have a word that we still use today, but it's got a different meaning essentially. And so the only real one that really jumped out at me sort of again and again and again is when he says something's decadent, he means sort of disgusting and inbred. And we don't really use the word that way, do we?
No.
Decadent to us, to me, just sort of means over the top. Not much more than that. But he uses it to mean basically inbred.
Well,
he uses it a lot, which is a bit odd.
I've come across the word in that usage before, but that might be because I read Lovecraft when I was a young teenager, so it just became part of my understanding of that vocabulary. So I'm used to seeing it that way.
It's like the word queer, just used to mean anything odd or strange. It's nothing to do with homosexuality, right? So
perfectly good word. And they took that from us.
But one last thing, just to wrap up the discussion from where we started it, regarding the modern perceptions of Lovecraft due to his prejudice. It is an awful shame that most of the time people now, if they recommend Lovecraft, they have to add a little asterisk, or one of the worst things is if they are adapting Lovecraft, because no matter your social views these days, Lovecraft has to be acknowledged and appreciated as a pioneer of this kind of cosmic horror, the unknowable horror that he was the one who really put out there. He has to be acknowledged in that way. So people will read his stories, they'll go, damn, this is good, I'll do an adaptation of this, but they have to switch all of the social messaging to be the complete opposite of what he was suggesting. They have to, at the same time, adapt his work, and as we're so familiar with these days, spit in his face at the same time. I know that one of the literary horror awards is a bust in the shape of Lovecraft's head. And some people, black American authors in particular, if they've been awarded this, have been horrified. They've been horrified at the idea that they're getting the image of this virulent racist that they get to proudly put on their shelf in pride of place. I do find it amusing, the idea of Lovecraft staring down at them in disgust.
In judgment.
Apologies. But I don't think that you should have to add all of these asterisks and anything like that. I think whatever you think of his social views, the stories are excellent in their own terms. They are reflective of the times. And frankly, who cares? they're great stories. If you agree with the message behind the stories, great. If you disagree with the message behind the stories, great. What I disagree with is people trying to bastardize and skin suit his work in the modern day. It's such a shame that we don't have, as far as I'm aware, a proper filmic retelling of many of his stories, that they've not been adapted, because I understand it would be difficult given that a lot of the horror is supposed to be unknowable and unseeable, but I think there could be some really fantastic films made as adaptations of these stories, and so many people are just afraid to touch them. They're afraid to touch them, and they shouldn't be. And they shouldn't be. The only other thing that I'll say before we get into the details of the story, if we've piqued your interest with Lovecraft and you've never read him before in this preamble to the discussion of The Shadow Over Innsmouth, Lovecraft's one actually a really easy author to get into because he didn't have an enormous body of work. He wrote a lot of stories, but most of them are very short. So you can get something like what Luca has here, which is a single volume collection of all of his fiction. All of it, just there. And it's pretty reasonable. You can get it for, what, like 20 quid?
Yep.
So if you want to read his stuff, you can get it very, very easily, all in one place, nice and convenient.
Or on YouTube, one of the first things that will come up if you search for H.P. Lovecraft audiobook is like a playlist of like 40 of all the best ones, just right there. So you don't even need to spend a penny or go to a bookshop or anything, or read. You could just have it playing while you're playing a computer game or doing the ironing or whatever it is.
You don't even need to read, so get on it.
You don't even need to be able to read to enjoy Lovecraft these days, something that I'm sure would absolutely horrify him.
You just need the internet and some earballs.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at COTA.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.